This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Caroline and Uma with you. We're going to take another look at the local creative industry. Now, ever since Malaysia Baru, everyone has kind of been vying for a place in the spotlight, right?
So vying for attention.
Vying for attention, because these are areas that may have been ignored, maybe.
There are many
the
areas.
Previous administration.
Clearly, many areas have been ignored for the longest time.
Correct. Yeah. And now I think the folks in the creative industry are looking to the Pakatan Harapan government for some direction and maybe some focus because, you know, as we know, the arts, film, literature, they all of invaluable importance to, I guess, the development of society. So some good news. I guess the Prime Minister has spoken out. Dr. Hem himself has come out and went and gone, you know, hey, guess what? You know, films, they're very popular. They have export potential. Maybe this could be a key economic mover.
Yeah, so just not films alone. The creative industries like filmmaking, drama production, animation have export potential. He said if products are works of quality, so, you know, he says the industry players must understand what overseas markets want in order to ensure that their products gain acceptance, not just rely on the local market alone. He said Korean and Hindustani films are popular. And if you want to make films that can be shown overseas, we must know their tastes. So he says government can help a little bit, but end of the day, it's the quality of the films that will determine if it can be accepted in foreign countries.
Yeah, quality, quality, quality. That is the word that needs to be emphasized, right?
Yeah. So I think it is on the positive front. Yes, the creative industry, like you said, really requires attention. It's been ignored for a long time. Well, ignored. Well, not ignored,
not
but
ignored,
perhaps not
but
supported in the right way.
Yeah, not enough attention.
Yeah, so some serious focus and many, I suppose, there have been many systemic and structural issues that have acted as a barrier to growth. You know, we've talked about this on the evening edition before. It's sad because there's clearly no lack of talent. We do know that a lot of our talented Malaysians in the arts have had to ply their trade overseas. Or we talk about Chinese writers moving to Taiwan.
Correct.
For example, you know, animation houses. And these are not necessarily outliers because for the longest time, leaving was the only way for serious growth.
Yes, and also because those countries have significant sources of revenue and grants and all of these things to actually make your life a lot easier if you are a creative individual looking to pursue that as a full-time job and career.
Yep, indeed. But what do you think of this? So industry players, he said, must understand what overseas markets want in order to gain acceptance, not just relying on the local market alone.
So, yeah, so here's the thing. I disagree with that statement simply because, you know, when we watch a great French movie, the French filmmaker didn't think about what Malaysians want.
Mm-hmm.
He just made a great movie.
Yeah.
He told a good story,
yeah.
Right? I think a lot of the problems with our local product is that they're not of great quality.
Yeah.
And I think therein lies the problem. I'm not sitting in a room thinking, let me tell you, what can I come up with that those Americans are really going to like?
Exactly. So I don't know if the sole motivator should be based on understanding the overseas demand or market. So, you know, I'm a fan of buy-in begins at home. I feel that, you know, if you get other locals to like it, you know, it gives us roots, for one. So you're actually developing an industry that's nurtured here in Malaysia based on what we already have,
yeah.
based on who we are.
Well, look at Hallyu, right? That's the perfect example of that story.
Yes.
Koreans love it too. It's not just us.
Yeah, I mean, it's now global, but it didn't start that way, right? So this whole drama watching culture has been massive in Korea for many, many years, and it was created to serve a local market. You know, the fact that it appeals to an international market. Yes, you know, you are seeing signs of, I suppose, very different storylines now that, you know, that cater to a different audience, I suppose. But that's not I don't think that's how it started out. And they're all in the Korean language.
Exactly.
As well, something to remember. I mean, so storylines are very, very local that way, created and centered around local culture. I don't agree with that. I don't think just focusing on overseas demand is necessarily the way to go.
And you know what? Just now on at the movies, I interviewed Ahmad Issa Momah, who was talking about his new movie, Pulang. And Pulang, for me, it's a very interesting example. I mean, it's not a perfect movie by any measure, but it tells a very unique and interesting story that we don't often see in Malaysian cinemas, right? It's his real life story about his grandfather who was on a merchant ship and part of the Malay sailors who kind of went to Liverpool in the 50s and 60s. You know, it's not just another police and thief shoot 'em up or a ghost story or the kind of things that studios churn out to make money.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is your take on this? You know, I feel that, like I said a little earlier, a lot of these Korean dramas, Korean movies do very well, but they're centered in, they're steeped in local culture, the local storylines. You know, it's stuff that the everyday Korean would more or less go. I'm not talking about every single one of them.
Yeah, but
you know, things like bloodlines, for example, very important central role in a lot of these Korean storylines. Do you think the fact that it's rooted in something that's real, local culture, makes a difference? Because that's where I feel, you know, if we look overseas, we're not nurturing something that's our own. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I think so. But also, you know, those stories in the Korean dramas relate to everyone, right? I mean, you can relate to it. They're universal. I mean, the kind of stories, the family dramas that you see, the love stories that you see, they travel so well.
So, but that's the thing, right? So if it's values that are universal, then it's not necessarily rooted in local culture because those values are universal.
No, but it still is, because when I watch a Korean drama, actually the one big takeaway that I find that's quite jarring as opposed to Western dramas is that men are a lot more emotional.
Okay.
You don't actually see that a lot in, say, Western soap operas.
Yeah, there is that, but I don't know how much of that necessarily reflects...
So Korean men just don't cry all
the time? No, I don't know. I don't think they cry as much as they do in the dramas. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. See, that's what I always thought. Oh, I tell you, movies and TV have a bad influence, right? So we're going to cross over now, you know, to Dr. Thomas Barker. He's the head of film and television over at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Tom, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Have there been any Malaysian productions in the past that were successfully exported?
There's different directions that they go in sometimes. There's the kind of Malay market. And the two most famous examples is Upin Ipin and also the horror film Munafik. Both of them were released and have been released, and Upin Ipin is still very popular in Indonesia. So that's one route in which Malaysian product does get popularity overseas. The other one is the Chinese language media. Many Malaysian singers have moved to Taiwan, and also a number of Malaysian films have been successfully screened in Taiwan and sometimes in mainland China. So it's usually those two markets that prove to be more successful for Malaysian TV and film.
So what were the common success factors for those productions, would you say?
I mean, I think most of those things are kind of well made and they fit a certain need in those destination markets. But in both cases, it's a language commonality, right? So exporting to Indonesia, it's a Malay-Indonesian language commonality. In Indonesia, they don't have necessarily good children's animation, so Upin and Ipin was able to come into the market and be quite successful. Horror films are always very popular. And I think the Chinese language films that get popular in Taiwan or are screened in Taiwan have a certain kind of a nostalgic feel to them, because often they're set in kind of kampung kind of areas, and that seems to play quite well in the Taiwanese market.
So what about the other side of the coin? Were there any productions that didn't do so well locally but did really well overseas?
That's a hard one to find, actually. Maybe what's kind of interesting is a film like My Stupid Boss that was a kind of Malaysia-Indonesia co-production. I think maybe what's more interesting, actually, is these new co-productions that are happening between Malaysia and Singapore, or Malaysia and Indonesia, or Malaysia and Taiwan, that we may not know about in Malaysia, but can often be quite popular in that kind of the other country. I mean, one film that did get released overseas that probably did better overseas than in Malaysia itself was Yue Hajisari's Hanyut, which was released in Indonesia earlier than in Malaysia as Gunung Emas Almaya. It didn't do very well in either market, but it may have been slightly better in Indonesia, simply because Indonesia is such a big market. In terms of its population.
Right. So, you know, I know you highlighted common language as one of those reasons why certain local productions are successful overseas, but that doesn't always apply, right? I mean, language hasn't really been a barrier for countries like we were saying a little earlier, Korea, Japan, India, the Philippines, who have managed to attract a huge international audience. So what do you think makes their stuff so popular?
In some cases, it's a diaspora. It's because those countries produce material that the diaspora in other countries enjoys and watches, and that provides a kind of gateway audience for other local audiences in those places. So the Indian diaspora, I mean, it's particularly big in the US, for example, but they continue to watch Indian product, and that also then can get passed on to other people in the US. Japan has a different kind of mode. Japan was producing very trendy content in the late 80s and early 90s, maybe more in the 90s. And it was content that spoke to people in places like Singapore and KL and Taipei and other rapidly developing cities in East Asia. And so that Japanese content became popular because it was dealing with themes and issues that people could not find in their local pop culture, but they could find in Japanese pop culture or more recently in South Korean pop culture. And the language barrier doesn't really matter in those cases because people enjoy watching exotic or something from a different kind of location, and they're quite happy to watch with subtitles.
Now, were there any other factors that contributed to the success seen in the likes of Korean productions?
Well, sometimes it's serendipity. Sometimes it's something that can't be planned, right? I mean, for example, the popularity of Korean drama and Korean music in Southeast Asia after the Asian financial crisis in the early 2000s was not really planned. I mean, it was because Korean product became very cheap after the Asian financial crisis, and it was cheaper than Japanese product, and it was as good as Japanese drama and music at the time, and it came in and people found something they enjoyed in it. So sometimes it's kind of serendipity, and same with Japanese pop culture. It wasn't purposely marketed overseas, but people pirated it, bit it, or discovered it without any kind of marketing or planning from, you know, Japanese TV or film executives at all. So market success is really, really tricky. But I think probably the relevant factor is that sense of, does this product have some kind of relevance to an audience elsewhere? If it's not going to be something kind of exotic, like an art house cinema, for example, which is kind of one-off films, then it's going to have to be something that has much more kind of resonance, or that's going to really tap into some really understand, I guess, what an audience in another part of the world is looking for, whether that's in terms of new types of stories or new types of content or something that's particularly cool. But also there's questions of infrastructure too, right? So we're much more accustomed to material from HBO, for example, or Netflix, because both of those big American companies have the infrastructure behind them. They have these global distribution networks. Whereas if you're a Malaysian film producer or a TV producer, you're kind of on the outside, you're on the periphery, you don't really have access to those channels of distribution, and it's much harder to get noticed. But it is possible. It is beginning to happen with things like HBO opening an office in Singapore. They're looking for local content, and there's possibility for Indonesian or Malaysian or Thai or Filipino film and TV producers and makers to get their material onto those platforms and therefore find audiences.
Well, you know, some of the suggestions put through from the industry to the Prime Minister include things like making loans more accessible, giving more tax incentives to really help boost the industry. But do you think that's enough?
I mean, Malaysia has a great filmmaking scene. I mean, I know some of these people, and they're very, very hardworking. They're very creative in what they do. I don't think there's any question about the quality of work that they can do. I mean, you've had filmmakers like Elam come from Hong Kong and shoot films like Operation Mekong and The Conspirators in Malaysia and been very, very happy with that experience. I mean, part of the problem has been in the past has been that FINAS has, on paper, is very generous in giving grants and development money to films. But as we know recently in the news, there's been all these questions about corruption and certain people getting money when they shouldn't have and films getting money and then not getting any audience. And so I think there is that benefit or those funds available which need to be fixed. And I believe that that's part of the new government's mission. And I think also there's probably a greater need to look at that on-the-ground infrastructure that filmmakers themselves need, whether that is film schools, whether that is other types of studios, or thinking about how to improve the FIMI, the Film in Malaysia Initiative, or to how to encourage more of these international co-productions. They're probably all things that could help in that kind of way.
Thomas, thank you very much for your thoughts. That was Dr. Thomas Barker, Head of Film and Television at the University of Nottingham in Malaysia. And he's absolutely right. There are all of these initiatives that actually are in place, but maybe they need a little more encouragement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the money should be put in the right places. You know, our new Minister of Communications has said that he wants to clean up the rot.
Yeah,
hear to that. Audit FINAS, that's what I say. All right, we've got more music coming your way.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.